station.
U-R-Y.
Hello, you are listening to Screen. It's been a bit of a mix-up, or well, I don't know. People have encountered some problems this week. So this week it's going to be just me and Beth and Sam. No Sasha or Matthew. Our hearts do grieve, though, and go out to them in these trying times. It's currently just me and Sam in the studio right now. Beth is, I believe, held up by a seminar. So, Sam, should we just move into what films YC is playing this week?
Yep. So this evening is Black Mass, tomorrow is Joy, and Monday is Brooklyn.
Okay, so tonight, Black Mass. Have you seen Black Mass?
No,
I haven't. Beth and Sasha saw it, and they seemed very keen.
Okay.
I'm tempted to go, but I think I'm slightly busy after this, actually, so I might not. But actually, Beth is just joining us now. which microphone is she going to use? I think she's using... Oh, no, she's using that one. Okay. Hi, Beth. Have you seen Black Mass?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Good.
Good?
Yeah.
You recommend it? It's playing at YC tonight.
Go.
All right. Well, that's a strong recommendation. I can't really get any stronger than that, can it? And tomorrow we have Joy. I've seen Joy. It's
bad.
It's bad. It's bad. It's that repeated formula by what's he called? David O. Something.
Russ.
Which I recently read an article on.
Oh really?
He changed the whole script.
He changed the whole script.
Yeah.
Wow.
He was given a script by the woman who wrote Bridesmaids.
If you change the entire script, is it really changing the script, or is it just writing a whole new script?
Well, yeah, he wrote a different script.
I see.
But
well, I mean,
the irony of him writing a script about a woman whose idea gets ripped off by ripping a woman's idea off.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have anything to say on that. I just have to say that I didn't really like the David O. Russell formula of getting Jennifer Lawrence and the other one, what's he called, Bradley Cooper, in just to give them really boring acting roles in these kind of, you know, characters who are kind of uplifting at the same time, but you know they've got a dark side. They've got a dark side. You know, that's the heart of man, isn't it? I was kind of bored by it, but the films I could acknowledge were still fairly well made. I was pleasantly surprised to find out that Joy is actually a badly made film, and I hope this brings closure to that repeated formula, and he makes something a bit more interesting next time, as he has, I think, the capacity to do. But yeah, I don't know. Has either of you seen Joy?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, you've seen it?
Yeah.
Oh, did you see it?
I've just been like, it's bad.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were just saying bad because, you know, because you always agree with my opinions. So,
yeah, I do.
Do you have anything else to add about Joy?
No, I just wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, neither would I. And next week on Monday, Brooklyn. I haven't seen Brooklyn, but Beth, you have.
I have.
Have you seen it as well?
Yes.
What do you guys think?
I like it a lot.
I didn't like it at the time, but now I'm thinking that maybe I should give it a second chance.
Should you? I mean, it's got Oscar nomination for Best Picture, as we'll be talking about later.
There's been so much buzz. It's making me doubt myself.
No, you've got to be strong in your convictions. You know.
What if I'm wrong, though?
No, peer pressure is meaningless. You know. Just think, what was the film make you... How does it make you feel? I mean, is it... Sasha seemed to object to it on kind of
on Irish
ethnic grounds.
Yeah.
She being Irish and found that its portrayal of Irish working women was... dishonest or something, I'm not sure. I mean, Beth, would you go see it and perhaps revise your opinion?
Yeah, I think I would.
Is it that kind of film that you could maybe not like it, but a second viewing might change
maybe,
your mind?
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
I can picture the
deal. Sam, you got any defence?
I suppose it felt quite genuine. I cried twice.
Oh, wow.
Now I feel really bad.
I think it does, perhaps, as an event which happens later on, it kind of loses its way a little bit in that part, but overall, I like it a lot.
Okay. I won't be going to see it.
Okay.
I'm
going
to say that outright right now. It's not my kind of film. But yeah, I guess Brooklyn, maybe, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, that's more or less all we have to say, I think. Should we go over one more time, Sam, what films are being played this week and the next?
Yes, so this evening is Black Mass, Friday is Joy, and Monday is Brooklyn.
And doors open at 6:30?
6:45.
6:45, and film starts at?
7:30.
7:30, cool. Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Sam. And tickets are £3 as always, I believe. Yes, very cheap. Anyway, Beth, should we just move on straight into reviewing films? Are we going to do... Now, you've seen The Finest Hour, right?
Yeah, hours, yeah.
Don't you sound pleased?
Yeah, multiple.
Do you want to do that one first?
Okay.
Just get it over with, or do you want me to go ahead and talk about How to Be Single, and then you can, you know?
Well, are you going to ramble on about how much you love How to Be Single?
No, I think I'm going to try to keep it restricted, not a too rambly review, but I don't mind. It's your call, really. I'm trying to sort of, you know, take things at a bit more chilled, relaxed pace. Ooh. So that we can actually fill out the hour. Ooh. Because we're missing two of our usual four members.
So chilled. I'll go first.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead. The finest, is it finest hour or finest hours?
Hours.
Hours. Okay, multiple. So it takes place over more than 1 hour.
A couple of hours.
All right. Do you want to give us a brief kind of synopsis?
Yeah, it's based on a true story about the greatest small boat rescue in American history.
The greatest?
The greatest.
Wow, okay.
The most successful. Basically, they had, there was this, it's in Massachusetts, hence many like Bostonian accents. And it's a, Chris Pine is a Coast Guard working at sea, meets this girl, Holly DeGranger. They like are engaged. There's a big storm coming. Yeah, I know. It's very fast, actually. Yeah.
Met her and then they were engaged. Yeah. No in between. Anyway, and there's a big storm coming.
There's a big storm coming.
Mr. Wayne.
One boat you see breaks in two, and then they have to go out and rescue it. And it's all
is it
about
the Titanic?
No, it's not.
Sorry.
It's another one.
Okay, another boat. Not the Titanic.
No, because one half of the boat is still afloat, and they're trying their best to keep it up, and it's a dual narrative of them trying to keep it up, and then Chris Pine and his crew coming out to save them all.
Okay, here's a clip. Or not, hon.
That boat is too small for these seas, and this ship will be sunk by nightfall. Every fella here wants to live. The only way that happens is if we run her aground. Now we're gonna set up a watch and look out for a shoal. I need four men working the pulleys on the emergency tiller. I need four men manning the pumps after steering. The rest of you run a bucket line topside down below. Communicate with the engine room. And somebody keep blowing that whistle.
You heard him, boys.
Indeed, we did hear him. That was Casey Affleck.
That was Casey Affleck
showing some firm
Graham
leadership.
McTavish.
So, how is it?
I did not enjoy it that much.
Okay.
The only redeeming thing about it is kind of the if you're interested in ships, there's a lot of like. Engineering specific.
Sorry, struggling not to laugh. Which, if you're interested in ships, that massive ship demographic.
Naval fan. it was quite a lot of decent kind of shots of, you know, impressive visuals of the ocean and general sinking.
Is it very CGI intensive, or are they using real water?
I think it's CGI, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is it kind of... Does it look good, though? Because CGI water looks really tacky
and
fake.
Looked, there was one scene that really impressed me, and it was just stuck in the middle. And, like, it was this really good scene, like, sandwiched in between really boring bits. Like, just like, Chris Pine, like, squinting because, like, rain was in his face and he's trying to make a hard decision. And then this really nice scene comes on, and I'm like, why couldn't you have used that the entire way through? Yeah, the acting's okay. Like Casey Affleck did quite a good job, kind of just holding that narrative together. Even though he overdid it a little bit at some points.
His boat has been torn in half.
True.
Is there such a thing as a kind of subtle approach to that?
He was a very seething character. He was very like he's very steadfast and not panicky or whatever.
Okay.
Chris Pine was okay.
Can we really expect anything more from Chris Pine?
No. And then Holly DeGranger played, her part was on land, trying to basically causing havoc within the Coast Guard, trying to find out what was going on and telling Eric Bana to bring him back with his Southern Belle accent.
Yeah, because I want to talk about this, because in the trailer it makes it look like Chris Pine's wife. It's just has no idea of what a Coast Guard's job entails, which is going out and saving people. Because it seems like a solid third or half of the trailer is dedicated to her going like, oh, you know, you've got to bring him home, you know, make sure he doesn't do his job.
It goes on for a long time as well.
Is it drawn out in the film as well?
A bit, yeah. And then all the Coast Guards are saying, what happens next time though? Do you understand what his job is? And she's just insistent, bring him home.
Do they say, you know what, fair enough, you know, just leave him behind, your wife wants you back?
No, they don't.
Okay,
good.
Good.
Part of his character progression, which is very, very, very explicit to the point of they literally say it. He goes by the rules, so he's very straight laced.
Okay.
doesn't break rules. So he has to ask permission to marry her because it's the formality and that's what he's supposed to do. So the crux of the whole thing is him breaking the rules, but so painfully done that it's just there was one moment where I thought they were going to do something, and then they didn't do it, and then 5 minutes later they eventually took the action that I was shouting at the screen for them to do.
Right.
So it's very like you can second guess pretty much every step of the way.
Okay. Can I ask? You say that Chris Pine's character is kind of, you know, the stickler for rules or anything. Is Casey Affleck's character the kind of the you know maverick. The rough yeah. maverick rule breaker?
Yes, he is.
Is it actually a buddy cop drama, but they're just never
they're
actually
just,
a buddies?
Well, they do meet, so eventually they do. Although that's not actually as satisfying as you think it would be.
Do they both become Coast Guard and chase down crooks or something?
Yeah.
Does anyone tell Casey Affleck that he's a loose cannon? That's kind of staple of...
Not in so many words, but there's a lot of, like... he chops a lifeboat down and things like that.
Oh, dramatic.
And gets into a fight and...
Oh, wow.
It's all Larry.
Wow. So, it seems very formulaic.
Yeah.
And you can
the reason I say about ships is that there was one moment where they it was supposed to be the kind of the climactic them trying to save the ship and manually steering it, but they all just kept saying naval terms, just repeating it to each other, and like I understood what was going on because of the way they'd structured it. But like there was like that on the ship, and then the Coast Guards where they'd repeat and say like one of the boats was called like the 356 or whatever, and then chief would like say like no, so and so is going on the 356, and then like that would just be as he clarified that and kept being insistent, he just kept using the same line, but it sounded really really bad. It wasn't a very good script.
Okay, so
one of the main things.
I mean, it sounds like if they're using all the correct naval terms, it would be a good script, right? But is it kind of impenetrable? Like, if you don't have naval knowledge, then you've got no idea what's going on. They don't really demonstrate what these kind of naval terms refer to.
Yeah, it just sounded silly because I didn't know.
Okay, but did it not make sense? Did it confuse you that you didn't know these terms?
At first, but.
Because, I mean, it's, you know, kind of the jargon of any occupation can sound kind of alien to those outside of it.
But
right?
It just seemed, it was just unnecessary. It didn't fit. Like, I can, like, as opposed to, like, The Big Short, where, like, they did it all, but then, and then they did it to excess and then explained it. Like, they kind of overdid it.
In The Big Short, they explained the economic terms they used.
Yeah, the housing
crisis. It's just not the naval terms.
The naval terms of the banks. They kind of did it to excess and then just... let it carry on, so you kind of got the gist of it but not entirely.
Okay, so I mean, it sounds like pretty much not a recommendation.
No, it was a bit of a waste of time.
It paints itself as a kind of not as anything notably kind of like intelligent or anything, but the trailer makes it look like a kind of a blockbuster action film. Has it got any kind of appeal to get your pace, your heart pulsing or whatever. Do you feel adrenaline or anything? What are those sayings for being excited?
When things went wrong on the ship.
Is it so bad it's good?
It almost gets there. Not quite. I was picturing like laughing at lines with other people. So maybe as like a casual sort of.
You just reminded me of a phrase. I'm not entirely sure if we're allowed to say it on air. Disaster porn, which people use to refer to the Titanic, right? Watching like multitudes of people die in horrible, you know, natural disasters.
Oh, it's not as gruesome as that.
Is it potentially one of those kind of films that you watch just to see loads of people die and laugh hilariously as a split breaks in two and thousands of, you know, lives are shattered?
It's kind of like somebody's written one of those and then taken out all the kind of good bits, the gruesome bits, and then just tried to put like a human aspect in it that doesn't follow through.
Right. Okay. So it's not even a fun bad film.
No, people don't die in it. Like it's not a. It's not
that's what we really want to see, isn't it?
We want to see people ship sinking.
Okay. So not a good disaster film.
No, but I could watch it and laugh about it with someone.
So you could watch it like on Netflix with your mates or something.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, that has...
You'd enjoy it.
So, would I? I don't think I would. That being said, I did watch John Carter of Mars the other day with a friend, which was great fun. It's a bloody awful film, terrible film, but it's great fun to watch. we won't go into that anyway. I'm getting very odd looks. Anyway, is that you done, or are there any kind of closing statements you want to give?
No, the best thing about it was the pack of Revels I ate in the cinema.
Oof, oh God, scorching. I don't even like Revels. That makes it even worse. Anyway, okay, I guess we should move on to How to Be Single. It's the film I watched, because everything about my personality just screams single woman in New York. Anyway, How to Be Single. Dakota Johnson is playing Alice, who becomes single after she decides to kind of, you know, go on a break from her four-year relationship with her boyfriend and kind of learn who she really is, that kind of, you know, typical cliche nonsense. And then, basically kind of follows her trials and tribulations in learning how to be single in New York. And for some reason, the film really wants you to know it's in New York. Like, it constantly pushes the fact that this is
New
York.
Is New York a character?
New York's
a character in the film.
Kind of. And essentially, throughout the film, she kind of gets guided by Rebel Wilson, who plays her kind of her friend and co-worker, Robin. Here's a really horrible clip.
In every male-female friendship, there's a total number of drinks, and if you hit that, it means you would definitely have sex. So how many drinks does it take to get you wasted?
2.5, but maybe three if I've eaten.
Okay, and Tom's is 8. So you can't hit 11 drinks between the two of you. Okay. Not 1 for you, 10 for him, not 6 for him, 5 for you.
If I had more than 5 drinks, I'd hook up with you.
My drink number is 27.
What?
I wouldn't even touch myself on less than 24.
Oh, absolutely hilarious. Fantastic. Top-notch comedy. Not. It's a really, really odd film, this one. It's got kind of two levels to it. On one, it's just a rather kind of bland rom-com. And on the other, it's this kind of Dante-esque narrative where New York is this hellscape and people in the dating game, single people, are, you know, the damned souls who are kind of perpetually torn apart in this thresher and reassembled just to be tortured all over again. And they're kind of, their sin is just being sort of bland, naive, boring people. It's not great. And the worst thing is that on that level, on that kind of Dante's level, and I realise this review is going to make no sense to anyone who hasn't read Dante, but tough, read it, it's good. Rebel Wilson is the sage. She is she is Virgil. She's the one who kind of espouses all these cosmic rules that everyone has to play by.
She is.
Which is odd, to say the least. Because if anyone's seen Rebel Wilson before, she's not the kind of the sage character. She's not Obi-Wan Kenobi in Star Wars, on the rom-com side of things, she's just the kind of the comedic relief as she usually is in films. It doesn't work because both sides kind of are at odds with each other. One good example is kind of, there's a bit where Dakota Johnson, she's having a bit of a rom bit. You know, we've had some com, now we're having some rom. She's with potential boyfriend number 3. They're looking through a window at some big bloody tree they have in New York during New Year's, I'm not sure, some Christmas tree or something, and it's all, there's people skating and it's all well lit, and for some reason they're constantly having pink bloom lighting just flooding everywhere, and I think they kiss, and then it literally just goes 3 months later, and then it's just a potential boyfriend number 3 going, I'm emotionally detached because my wife is dead, and it's just awkward and strange, and they break up, and it's just, it came out of nowhere, and it kind of does those kind of repeated instances of, like,
not deliberately.
What do you mean deliberately?
Like, is that supposed to add to the comedy?
No, it's not meant to be funny. And I mean, he doesn't literally, but it's literally like, Dakota Johnson is talking with his daughter, whose mother has died. And then he takes her out and he's like, I can't have you emotionally attaching to anyone around me because I'm emotionally distant. And I'm emotionally distant because my wife is dead. And she's just like, oh my God, I'm really sad. And he's like, oh, I'm so angry and sad. And then they break up. It's weird and dark, right? And they just have, there's like repeated instances like that where Dakota Johnson is like, oh, you know, I'm finding something happy in my life after a sad breakup, and then just something horrible and kind of cynical and empty happens to her, and it kind of, that seems to happen to everyone, and kind of they go through these repeated cycles of suffering.
I can see what you mean, with no real catharsis.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm pushing it a bit strong, but it does have that element to it. It's a mix of these two layers of just a standard rom-com and this kind of trials and tribulations drama. And it doesn't flesh out either of them to the full extent. It was just unhappy. It wasn't a fun time, so it couldn't be a rom-com. because no, I wasn't having fun, mostly. I mean, at some parts I did laugh. You know, it is funny at some points. I should say that for this film, that okay. Some of the comedy elements did make me laugh. And I was in an audience of, I'd say, about 20, and I think it was one of the only two men there, and everyone laughed. So I don't think it's that kind of, you know, some people sort of do that whole kind of, oh, it's women's comedy, it's men's comedy, blah, blah, blah. I don't think so. I laughed. Although, admittedly, I did laugh at some points when no one else was laughing, which is a bit awkward. But yeah, on the other side of things, you have this kind of, as I said, this trials and tribulations narrative that just, it's not fleshed out enough for it to be easily recognised and to feel kind of like it fits. It's just underplayed enough that it feels uncomfortable. Mm. And it needs to, what they need is like some kind of, either using True Detective, it needs like kind of Matthew McConaughey as Rustin Cole going like, you know, the hubris to drag a soul out of nothingness and put it into this meat, this thresher. Like, you need that kind of character to just really shove it into the uncanny valley. And it could potentially be this kind of fun, maybe not fun, but this interesting film, this kind of exploration of people.
Do you think they've just tried to put a spin on the rom-com?
I think what the issue is actually is it's trying to be educational while its philosophy is very cynical. So I think on one side it wants to be your standard rom-com, but at the same time it's called How to Be Single. It's not being single, it's how to be single. So it wants to have this kind of educational element, you know, this is the arc of being single. But its idea of what being single is this very kind of cynical idea that there's these, you know, these kind of cosmic rules and this path of hot coals that you have to tread across to become single, to kind of become comfortable being alone with yourself, which I personally disagree with, and I'm not going to get into the kind of, you know, the philosophy of single life. But it's, I mean, the clip I played, it has, you know, Rebel Wilson saying, oh, you know, if you hit these number of drinks, you will have sex with this person. And it does do a bit in the scene in the film where they count the drinks and then they just suddenly have sex. It's weird and awkward, and it's kind of, they're bound by these horrible fatalism. Rules that make them suffer. Yeah, it's kind of got this element of fatalism. And as I said, it doesn't soak the film, it doesn't completely drown it or anything, because it's not fully fleshed out as a layer to it. But what it does do is it clashes with the kind of the other layer, which is the rom-com part. So it doesn't really function overall as a film, I think. It wasn't very good, basically, is what I'm trying to say. Would not recommend.
No.
No. Although, I mean, I don't know.
It's a great week.
I'm trying to think if there's any redeeming qualities. It has Alison Brie, who I'm a big fan of from Community, in it. Her character's really weird. They do the kind of, they do the Big Short kind of, you know, they've got like the little pieces of text kind of showing different parts. She does a diagram explaining like people being single in New York using, well, not a diagram, but she does like, it's weird. She gets introduced talking about these kind of dating algorithms and how she's using dating sites and like her odds of finding a partner and so on, and uses peanuts to kind of demonstrate how many people are actually available, dateable males for her to find. And then that kind of aspect of a character is never brought up again at all. After that, she's just turns out to be this kind of crazy lady who's obsessed with marriage, kind of, but then manages to get a boyfriend who looks like kind of maybe 15 years older than her, which is a bit weird. But but that being said, Alison Brie kind of just looks young, so maybe they are the same age. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's a weird kind of too cynical to be fun, and, you know, kind of not enough fun to be fun film. I would recommend no one go see it. The Guardian gave it 4 out of 5 stars. I'm not sure why. I can't figure it out.
Really?
Yeah, The Guardian gave it a good review. I Guardian readers, maybe they're going for this kind of thing.
Like, that does seem quite a surprise. Like, I didn't expect it to be as cynical. It seemed quite straightforward.
I worry my review is giving the idea that it's like it's constantly just this kind of this drudging wasteland of suffering. It's not, but it has that kind of subversive layer to it. That this the being single is this kind of this hellscape. And you asked about New York being a character. No, they just play a song where someone's going, "It's New York, it's New York" at the start, and then you go, a nice panning shot of New York, and then you go, "Oh, okay." It's something special about New York. I mean, I'm not an American. I've got no idea if New York is this kind of special, iconoclastic place. Is it? What's different about it?
It's a magical kingdom where dreams come true.
Well, it's not. It's a horrible hellscape where people just doomed to perpetually suffer. That's the reality of it.
Maybe it's all just a metaphor for New York.
Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe I've absolutely misunderstood it. And actually, it's meant to feel like it's secretly
that
telling people about the terrible. Maybe. I mean, they don't mention it at all in the review, but maybe they're being secret and subversive as well. I don't know. Anyway, that's more or less the end of the review. Don't give them money. That's my recommendation. I think we should briefly, we haven't got too much time, but we should briefly touch on Oscars, I think.
Sunday.
It's 3 days until they tell us who should win these. Well, they tell us the wrong people, probably. You guys got any bets, hopes? Who do you think is going to win? I'm already annoyed because Beast of No Nation isn't in the Oscars in any category, and Idris Elba should be winning an Oscar.
Yeah, the whole thing with the blackout and the whitewashing of the Oscars, like I kind of have a version to it, because I I disagree with, like, you know, I want representation in the film industry, but then, like, also, like, I just think that Idris Elba should have been nominated for his performance.
Yeah.
Regardless of anything else.
No, I mean, I had to give a talk on this, and I did a bunch of research, and now I'm kind of like, well, it is kind of whitewashed, but actually it's Latinos who suffer the most prejudice by a massive margin. So on one hand, I'm like, yes, Hollywood is somewhat racist, but on the other hand, I'm like, well, actually, this movement is completely racist. Misguided. But yeah, I mean, Matt Damon should not be beating Idris Elba for acting in a leading role. Who do you hope is going to win Best Picture? I hope it's Mad Max, because it is obviously the best picture there.
I would go Mad Max, although I'm still upset that Carol wasn't nominated.
Yeah, Carol didn't get anything, did it?
It was nominated for a few other things.
It's got a nomination somewhere.
Oh, Cate Blanchett
was. Yeah, but then I think they can choose up to 10 films could be in Best Picture. So they could, there was 2 empty slots and they didn't put it in. It's quite strange.
Okay, I mean, you... Beth, you and Sasha kind of panned Brooklyn, so I'm kind of surprised to sit here, but everyone seems to love it.
Yeah, and so, it won a BAFTA.
Yeah, I don't know where The Martian is in Best Picture either. The Martian, everyone's given Martian the awards. It's all right. It's not that good a film.
I agree. I think it does everything well, but
it doesn't do anything. It doesn't do anything really well, does it?
No,
that's the issue.
Exactly.
It kind of, I mean, my kind of review of it is it kind of stretches itself too thin. Really, goes in too many different directions and doesn't do anything to the extent that it to the quality that it could have. But I think Mad Max is amazing and the best one ever, and it's beautiful and I love it, so it should win.
My prediction is that The Revenant will win.
Yeah.
Yeah. My prediction is it will. It shouldn't at all. I'm worried that they might give if they give Leonardo DiCaprio the kind of the Oscar for The Revenant, he might just go crazy, because it's not. I don't think Leonardo DiCaprio is that good an actor, and this isn't his best performance ever, and The Revenant is not that good a film, so he might just kind of. It might be the most bitter victory there is, you know, in that he wins in one sense but kind of loses in others, because he may never get an Oscar again if they give him this one. I don't know. You guys got any other calls before we sign off?
I'd like Brie Larson to win.
For Room?
In
Leading Actress?
In Leading Actress, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've seen many of those films, so I can't really make a judgment call.
Yeah. I think she'd be old Kate as well.
Mm. Yeah, I quite think Fassbender should win for Best Actor out of ones nominated.
For Steve Jobs.
For Steve Jobs.
I haven't seen Steve Jobs, but I think Matthew thought it was pretty good, didn't he?
Yeah, we saw it.
Oh, right. Did you think he's good in it, Steve Jobs?
Yeah, he's good. Like, he didn't wow me as much as he has in other things. So, like, a similar thing with, like, DiCaprio, that's not his best performance, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, I think that's the end from us. I want to say thank you to Sam and Beth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I've been Liam. This has been Screen. Next up is the York Sport Report.
AM and online. This is your Guineas student radio station. You are right.